The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the programme on this Tuesday, the 14th of April, 2026. And it's good to have you on board. Just to give you an idea of how you get in contact with the programme, we do want your contacts, of course, 086 60 25000. That's your WhatsApp. That is your text number. It's the same number for both. You can also give us a call on 074 91 25000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. If you want to watch today's show, as you can every single day, go onto the YouTube channel on your mobile devices, your smart TV or your Fire Stick, and just search Highland Radio Ireland, and we are there. We've got a wonderful community of people that watch the show across our various platforms, and you can join that community. Also, we're on Facebook, as I mentioned, across all of those platforms. And Facebook used to allow you to stream on the telly, but they don't any longer. But anyway, we've got YouTube there for that. Now, in the first hour, after we have a look at the newspapers, if you haven't heard the news, was very upset to learn late last night of the passing of Moya Brennan. And Moya was a regular guest on this programme and a regular guest on Highland Radio, from Sean Doherty's show to Monday Night Sessions, John Bresnan's show. She was a very familiar and regular voice on the programme. And Moya, not just a singer either, she was an atmosphere, or the atmosphere of Donegal, I think. The atmosphere of Donegal made audible. As the unmistakable voice of Clannad, she pioneered that sound that brought the Irish language and that Celtic mysticism into the global mainstream, and of course earned a Grammy and the title of the First Lady of Celtic Music. We'll be reflecting on some of our conversations with Moya in this hour, and be joined by some of her friends to pay tribute to her. And it's very difficult as well, because, you know, we're asking people to pay tribute to not just a musical icon, a legend of Donegal, a legend of music and a wonderful person, but also a very dear friend. So we'll speak to some guests a little later on. Maybe you have your own memory or story to share of Moya Brennan, who very sadly, as I mentioned, passed away following a short illness. Feel free to share them with us. But stay tuned, because as I say, we'll be, how could you pay justice to such an amazing life, but we will. And you know, the one thing, and I'll probably tease this out with our guests a little later on, the one wonderful thing I think, and I hope Moya's family and friends get great comfort from it, was the recognition and celebration of her as a person, as an individual, but also as the musician, and all the influence that she had. Of course, in 2023 she was named Donegal Person of the Year, and that was a wonderful night. I was blessed to be at that. It was absolutely amazing seeing her up on the stage, and Rainey Mooney, who'll be joining us a little later on. And I was looking back at some pictures last night, and just the energy and the joy, the pure visceral joy of them singing and performing together was just a joy to behold, and a wonderful thing to be in attendance at. Daniel O'Donnell, of course, he and Moya's lives and musical lives fully intertwined. But also, to what was interesting, and we're reaching out to see if we can get some of the footage, was the scope and the influence of Moya Brennan. And in the tribute package for the Donegal Person of the Year, they put together a tribute package. It was the who's who of the music industry, not just locally to us, although they're international stars, of course, not just nationally, but internationally. And these are people who were speaking from the heart about someone they thought so much of. And it's just terribly sad. But really, the point I was began with is it's wonderful, I think, that Moya was so celebrated in life, because often we talk very warmly about someone after they pass. But we were all able to show our admiration and fandom, I suppose, to Moya whilst she was alive. Okay, that's coming up a little later on. Right, but as I say, if you've any memories or any messages to share, please feel free to get in touch with us, 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. I must continue. We'll look at the newspapers and the fallout from the fuel crisis that continues. When I say fallout, it's not really a fallout. We're in the midst of it, but I suppose the fallout of the government's handling of it and the protests and what have you. I'll start with the Irish Independent, and a coalition blame game is underway over the controversial threat to call in the army to help police blockades that had cut off access ports last week. A spokesperson for Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan said he discussed the idea of using the assistance of the Defence Forces at the Whitegate refinery in East Cork with Fine Gael leader Simon Harris and Taoiseach Micheál Martin on Wednesday night. The next morning, Mr. O'Callaghan publicly announced that a formal request was being made to the Defence Forces to help with policing. However, Defence Minister Helen McEntee was not consulted until just before the request went in. The threat to deploy the army was viewed by some in the government as a major misstep, which only served to strengthen the resolve of protesters and escalate tensions. And as it turned out, the army weren't needed. They were put into an awful situation, as the Gardaí were. And I know people might say, well, just don't follow orders, but you can't do that. And I think we're all big enough and clever enough to know they can't. That's their job, their task to do that. The army were never needed. The army really didn't have a role. But those headlines, the Irish government calls in the army to deal with protesters, they weren't just national, they were across the world. And Ms. McEntee might be feeling a little bit sidelined, the fact that she got such short notice. Perhaps she would have been of the view that the army wasn't needed at all, but she didn't get adequate consultation to make those views known. On to the Irish Times, and Garda protection is being stepped up for senior politicians, including the Taoiseach Micheál Martin. This due to fears they could be targeted amid public anger following the fuel protests over the past week. And I just want to say something in relation to that. I fully understand that there are elements out there that are very hardline and might do that. But I also know that anyone I know who is very peed off about this situation and even potentially on the brink of losing their business would never do anything to harm another person. They might exercise their rights peacefully and loudly and with passion, but they certainly wouldn't be. So I hope it's clear in its coverage going forward that they're not talking, I don't think, about the general population. But anyway, reading on, there are concerns some of those involved have effectively become radicalised and will seek to publicly confront senior politicians, creating confrontation that could spiral. Along with Martin, Tánaiste, and Minister for Finance Simon Harris, Minister for Justice Jim O'Callaghan, and Minister for Defence Helen McEntee were also outspoken against those involved in the blockades. The Garda's efforts to ensure that safe passage around the country will now involve added security and deeper planning. Garda Commissioner Justice Kelly has already said he was aware of attempts in person and online to threaten and intimidate Gardaí who had been policing the protests and blockades. And I would imagine what part of that is the capturing of the moment. A guard was using pepper spray, and that guard has been identified and his face put up for all to see. And I think it was in that context that the commissioner was commenting there. But obviously, and I'm not wishing to depress or pee anyone off, but it's just the reality of life, and it's important to reflect the reality of life. We are facing these increased costs all the while at the pump, but it would be easy to forget, potentially, unless it affected you directly, that many, many families are suffering by not being able to pay their electricity. And believe it or not, and I'm sure you will believe it, our electricity prices are now the highest in the EU. I mean, look out your window. If you're in Donegal, you can probably see a wind turbine and you wonder why, perhaps. Ireland has the highest electricity prices in the Europe before taxes, levies and energy credits are taken into account, a new study shows. This is on page 2 of the Irish Daily Mail. Why that is important? Well, that's the raw cost of it, right? So we're paying more for electricity. you can't blame the government on this one per se. This is before taxes, levies and energy credits. Ireland's exposure to international gas prices helped push up residential power prices, as 29% of it comes from gas-fired generation plants. Wind turbines supplied 22% and the rest was a mix of coal, peat, oil, burning waste, solar and hydroelectric. The ESRI study released yesterday explains, taking into account relative purchasing power, residential Irish electricity prices fell to the 15th highest in 2024, close to the EU average. However, bills could rise by €100 by 2029 as the cost of upgrading the grid is passed on to bill payers, which sticks in the throat of some because, of course, you know, these companies are hugely profitable. Donald Trump continues to behave bizarrely. I think even his most ardent of fans now, and I'd love to chat to one, I think even if his most ardent of fans now are struggling with him taking the United States to war when he says he was a president of peace, claiming he was a Christian, but being blasphemous and displaying himself as Jesus Christ, and also having a go at the Pope. You know, even Hitler didn't have a go at the Pope. That's the truth. You know, he didn't. But Trump has. But Donald Trump last night took his medicine and dumped the pic of him as Jesus, saying, I thought I was meant to be a doctor. So even though it's clearly a depiction of Jesus, he was making out that he was a doctor and it was something to do with the Red Cross. The US president sparked a holy war after posting the jaw-dropping image online. Christian supporters of the president labelled it disgusting, while opponents accused him of being unhinged. Even Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian said it was a personal attack on Pope Leo and was unacceptable to any free person. There you go. You heard on the news there, but just to recap in case you didn't, a man charged with the murder of former senior Sinn Féin official Dennis Donaldson. He's been remanded in custody until June for the service of the Book of Evidence. Anton Duffy appeared before the Special Criminal Court yesterday via video link, and he spoke only to confirm his name. And as I said at the beginning of the programme, I think we were all very, very saddened, devastated, in fact, to learn of the passing of Moya Brennan. As I said earlier, more than a singer, she was Donegal in audio, if you like. And we're going to be speaking to some people very, very shortly. But as I mentioned also, Moya was a regular guest on this programme and came in on her 70th birthday, if you don't mind, literally on the morning of her 70th birthday. And we had a long-ranging conversation, which we'll put up later. But Moya outlined, really, I suppose, the early stages of her wonderful musical career.
My father sent me to Sligo to learn the harp. He had this in his mind that it was something. This is long before, obviously, you know, the thought of Clannad came into being. But he just, Mary O'Hara, he loved Mary O'Hara, and that's where she learned the harp. So I hated it first, you know, because I just, this image of, like, you know, this kind of Colleen girl, yes, singing the spinning wheel, you know, with the harp, and I really hated it. And it was only that when the Paul and Kieran and Páidí Gnó, we used to practice when everybody used to leave the pub. When my dad opened the pub, Leo's Tavern, you know, over 50 years ago, it was like microphones and everything for us. And we used to just get up when everybody left and practice and do things. And the boys were playing together and they said, you know, how about the harp, you know, to bring the harp in. And that's when I started liking the harp, because they included it as part of the arrangements rather than sticking out, kind of, you know, yeah, as being that Irish Colleen thing. So it worked really well. And you know, and it's kind of, as I said, that with the voices and the you know, the instrumentation around us, I suppose, like, I mean, coming from Donegal has a lot to do with the sound we have, yeah, and the Gaelic language as well. Because, you know, people have asked around the world, you know, said, where do you get that sound? And I just say, come to Donegal and, yeah, you'll feel that earthiness.
You.
And
Yeah, particularly, yeah, sure, the further west you go, I think, nowadays.
Yeah.
Obviously, because I can't take up too much of your time, but when did it become clear that you were onto something? Do you know what I mean?
I suppose not until Harry's Game. We were enjoying, we had our sixth album made, And we had a song on there, a Scottish Gaelic song that we were starting to experiment vocally with and keyboards. And the writer of Harry's Game heard that album and loved what we were doing. And he approached Yorkshire TV and said, look, I want something really different for this the show. And so they came over and spoke to us about it. And, you know, we were always a cultural band. And so, you know, we were really careful in not getting involved politically in anything. And when we saw what it was about, we hadn't a clue what this what it was about until we saw the rushes.
Moya Brennan. Daniel O'Donnell joins me on the programme now. Daniel, condolences on the loss of a dear friend and someone who clearly you held in incredible high regard. Just watching and listening to that interview, we were so blessed to have Moya in studio on the day of her 70th birthday. It's incredibly sad news.
Oh, that's very sad. We just can't take it in at all that she's gone. You know, she was such... I mean, apart from her wonderful talent and her great success that herself and Clan had brought all over the world, she was just a gem of a person, you know, just a lovely person to be with. And she loved Donegal. She loved being back in Dore. And, you know, her heart just was in this area. And you know, she was just so involved in, you know, the club yaw that she was involved in and Leo's once a month, you know, giving young singers and musicians a chance to come and get a platform there. She was so, she gave so freely of herself, you know, and she was just lovely to be in her presence. That's just, to her family, to, you know, Tim and to Ashton and Paul and Bava, her mother, and all the family. I mean, they are the ones that have the loss. I mean, we are talking about her surely, and we'll miss, you know, her friendship, and all of our fans will miss the music, but they'll always have her music. It'll live on long after all of our days. But it's the family that have the great loss. They, you know, they just can't, that gap can't be filled.
When Moya was celebrated as the Donegal Person of the Year, there was a tribute package paid to her. And, you know, obviously we can be very parochial and think, you know, people like Moya are ours. We do the same with you, Daniel. But to hear the voices on that package, the likes of Bono and others, her reach was just unbelievable, a true international superstar.
Oh, yeah, she was, you know, admired by everybody. You know, those, and I suppose that we look as world stars, you know, Moya was among them. And they admired her and they looked to her as somebody who, you know, pioneered. They did pioneer, you know, Moya and Clannad. They pioneered, you know, the world of music with their sound. Their sound is unique to them and the music they created. And, you know, as she said there, they brought the songs of the area and married them with the new sounds that they created. And that's what they brought to the world. You know, and when we think on, you know, by times that there's a great struggle to keep the Irish language alive, they were able to bring it and sing it all over the world. And it was accepted.
Yeah.
And that's a great, you know, tribute to them and to her. So, you know, her legacy will never be lost. And, you know, as you say about being parochial and everything, but I am so glad that Moya was honoured as Donegal Person of the Year. They got the Freedom of Donegal. She opened the festival in Dunlow a few years ago. And I know for a fact that she was absolutely thrilled to be asked to open the festival.
Yeah.
She said it to me. You know, so the importance of the world stage is one thing, but there's nothing like a clap on the back from your neighbours.
So true. And we celebrate.
Do you know what
her,
I mean? Yep.
As she knew how loved she was.
That happened, yes.
Okay.
It's, important. And, you know, we were blessed, Magilla and myself, and more so in the recent past, I suppose, when she wasn't as busy and we weren't as busy. You know, we got to spend time with her, and it's a blessing. So we'll never, you know, or we'll be forever grateful and never forget the times we spent with her.
Okay, Daniel O'Donnell, thank you so very much indeed. Mairead Ní Mooney, thank you so much for joining us, and condolences on the loss of a friend. As I mentioned, I was at the start of the show, I was looking through pictures from Dublin, and the smile and joy on your and Moya's face up on the stage, it was just unbelievable. And it's so terribly sad, isn't it?
It's so sad, and it's like we've lost a friend, as Daniel beautifully said there, you know, a great tribute to a lady. She was so unique, so special. Here in Donegal, we're so proud of her. Just that gorgeous voice that nobody else could emulate, and the way it came from an otherworldly place, because no one could actually, even an AI tool couldn't replicate that, you know. It was so spiritual, personal. And when I reflect about last night when she passed away, the sun was going down behind Gola Island, and I just thought how apt that was for her passing. The evening sun last night in West Donegal was just beautiful, and she chose that minute to leave us, and it just reflected her life to me, because she was somebody that was gentle but still strong. She had a great innocence and a great creativity, but had a great wisdom as well. So to have all those attributes and characteristics in the one person was just amazing. And to me, she will always be my friend. And I feel she may be gone, but her legacy, as Daniel says, lives on. Her voice will never leave us. And I think she'll surround us with that love that she had for people, for life, for she had just this great zest for life and fun as well. She was a serious musician, but full of fun.
And, you know, it's not just saying, it's a fact. Almost every, when you're talking to her about her music and her career and her life, and every sentence, every third sentence seemed to end with the word Donegal, or contained the word Donegal. That's just, you know, that's just something from within that has to come out.
Yeah, well, she was very, very proud to be from Donegal. And, you know, whenever she could, she advertised our county, our people, our music, our language. And as Daniel said, her music didn't have any restraints. It went into every type of music, you know. So she was loved by so many genres of music, and she collaborated with even rap and with electronic music recent years. And I just used to laugh at her with her big doughy eyes, just saying, you know, that's what it is, you know. And she was more surprised than anyone else that people loved her singing. She didn't know where it came from, but she had a blessing that will always echo. And she amassed an angel, and she's amongst the angels now, and she will be leading that choir, I'll tell you.
Yes, and just finally, because I know you're very busy, but when we talk of legacy, it's not just what we have of her recorded. Her legacy continues through future generations as well, because she was so giving of her time in terms of collabs, support, platforming, encouragement. You know, yes. The ripples of her legacy are not just in the past, they continue into the future.
Oh, definitely. Well, her own family, Aisling and Paul, are so musical, and they experiment with loads of different types of music as well. But not alone that, she had this great way with younger people. There was no age difference at all when she was working with younger people, and that's how she gave the platform and club you to the likes of George Houston and, you know, people that are now well known in the music business, and Emini Arishke and a lot of the young musicians from this area. She just loved to encourage people because she knew how hard it was to make a living as a musician, and she just wanted to give people a platform and to enjoy it, and she loved her music and her song.
Okay, thank you very much, and for a wonderful tribute, and condolences too on your personal loss, and we're thinking very much on Moya's nearest and dearest.
Yes, Mahovron le Tim agus Paul agus Aisling, the O'Brien family, and Clonid and all her friends, and Cormac de Barra, who was with her all the time in her more recent concerts.
Yeah, Garamaya good. Thank you so much.
Bye bye.
Right. Okay. Let's go to the Cathaoirleach of Donegal County Councillor, Paul Canning. Paul, I don't think neither you or I are incredibly, incredibly musical, but we certainly know a special person and good music when we hear it. And Moya Brennan, the voice of Donegal, really.
Yeah, Greg, thanks for allowing me on here. And it's a sad day, but first and foremost, as the Ciarla of Donegal County Council, I'm on behalf of everyone in the county of Donegal, I want to offer my sincere condolences to Tim, to children Aisling and Paul, and to the Brennan family on the death of their much loved Moya Brennan, as we just heard there. May she rest in peace. Moya family ambassadors for this county for so many years through their wonderful music, you know, and they received, as Maria and Daniel have said, they've received the freedom of the county in 2024, and she was Donegal Person of the Year the previous year, and also opening festivals. And the high esteem that the likes of Maria and Daniel hold Moyan it can only be complimentary because of Daniel and Maria at the level that they are at, you know. So we're going back to like Clannad, those are the people that actually brought Irish or Skilga to the top of the pops, you know, back in the day, and that was no mean feat. And on the other side of the coin, like I met Moyan, humble in their achievements, and they teaching the young people, and they're going on to teach others and so forth, you know. And it is truly a sad day for the people of Donegal losing such an inspirational, talented lady and a true friend of this county. I think it's just, you know, it's just a sad day as well. And also the other, as Daniel had previously said, and I met a few very talented people at the Tip O'Neill Awards, and for people to be recognised by their own community means more to them than the worldwide recognition. And that is an abundance, and which we are so lucky to have. So people like Moya Brennan promote that, and it's great for this county that they do. So again, may she rest in peace.
Thank you very much
to all of her family.
Thank you very much for joining us. That's Councillor Paul Canning. And you heard Daniel O'Donnell reference how giving of her time and how much joy Moya got in performing ceremonies, I suppose, as Donegal Person of the Year. And we were over at Genesis, very close to Moya's home. She was Donegal Person of the Year in 2023, and she called in for a wee chat to talk about what it meant to her to receive that honour.
It's overwhelmed the amount of people that were there. It was the biggest crowd they've had in ages, and you know, just walking in with Elaine, the president of the Donegal Association, and the piper in front of us, and everybody stood up. It was like, and I was kind of, it was really overwhelming and humbling, and then just, you know, everybody's kind of talking about you, they're there for you, and all the different types of people that came as well to celebrate with
me. Did you
me
allow
was...
yourself to fully enjoy the spotlight? Or were you, well, I don't know, were you a...
It was a different kind of spotlight, yeah, I suppose, but, you know, yeah. in a way. And, you know, I was quite nervous. I had to make a speech, so... You know, there was, you know, I had to sort of reserve myself. There was very little eating and drinking going on before that. But, you know, I knew that there was great friends there, great family there, particularly musical friends as well, like Mairéadh Ní Mhúinne and the Friel sisters, Altan, you know. And that kind of support as well, Cormac de Barra that plays with me in my band. And you know, it was just an amazing celebration. Mm. I mean, people I talked to afterwards, they said it was one of the best parties they were ever at. I mean, I think I was one of the last people to leave with Sean McGinley, the actor, at 6 a.m. when we were eventually thrown out of the bar. But, you know, it was... you just didn't want to attend because they kind of after we played the music and Altan were playing and the Friel sisters and then we were all on the stage playing together, singing together, and then... After that sort of finished, the session started.
Yeah.
And then when they threw us out of the ballroom, we all went into the bar. And the session was, you know, Mickey Joe Hart was there and local people, Sean Rogers was singing and Barley was singing and loads of different people. Gavin from Mary from the Low Festival was singing. Like,
Mr. McGranahan was there as well, of course.
Yes. It was amazing. It was really amazing.
And I think, too, and I think this is a tribute to the organisers, but also yourself and those that were celebrating with you. Obviously, it was organised and it was structured, but it didn't have that feel to it either, if you know what I mean. It felt very natural and organic, if that makes sense.
That's... And anybody that knows me, I suppose, it was that type of night. Because Elaine would say to me, you know... We're kind of, well, we can carry on with the rest. I said, let's keep going. It's grand. But, you know, myself, I'm dyslexic, so I can't really write notes down for myself. So I always sort of, during the week, I was kind of saying what I wanted to say. But it was, to me, I just wanted to be as natural at what I wanted to say that night myself as well. And people felt that. But you're right. It had that feeling of just... not totally structured. It was just kind of everybody just feeling the natural feel of the night and the celebration and everything. It was really amazing. So I'm getting loads now of people asking me to open events and different things. I'm opening the run and walk in Letterkenny on the 6th of May. And then there's some prize giving in a college in Milford and somebody in the Leonard Festival in Ramelton wants me to. It's lovely. It's
nice,
really,
isn't it?
It is.
It's kind of
and I'll do as many as,
well.
as I can.
Oh.
Now, of course, we've talked extensively about the fuel price crisis on this programme, and much of the focus would be on, you know, maybe agriculture or fishermen or haulage. And of course, too, we've dedicated an awful lot of time to just regular people. And very little has been done by all accounts, I think, in terms of the cost of home heating oil. I call it home heating oil, but it's heating oil for whatever environment you might be. And I'm joined on the programme now by chairperson of the Manor Cunningham Community Resource Centre in Manor Cunningham, of course, Carmel Doherty. Carmel, thank you very much for your time.
Carmel, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me, Greg.
Okay.
There's
a little bit of an echo there. I'll tell you what I might do, Carmel. I'm going to disconnect and reconnect, Carmel, if that's okay. I have the number here if you don't have it, do you? In relation to the very sad passing of Moya, one of the many fond memories of Moya was at a live radio broadcast from the Portobello Bar in Dublin, says this listener. It was on the eve of the 1992 All-Ireland final. Moya stood up and sang Guibara, unaccompanied in her beautiful Donegal Irish. The venue was packed with Donegal fans who put down their drinks, some in tears, with pride in their county team about to compete in the first ever All-Ireland senior final. And of course, they went on to win it. What a wonderful, wonderful memory. And please feel free to keep sharing them. Trump. On the issue of Donald Trump, a caller says, "Hi, Greg. Why doesn't Trump show how brave he is by mocking the Prophet Muhammad?" I wouldn't put it past him, to be honest with you. I know that argument often comes up, and you know, I was really quite disappointed. Actually, one of my favourite podcasts, which I won't mention, two or three episodes ago, were sort of mocking Christianity or people who believe in Christianity. And it kind of, it's put me off. I haven't enjoyed it since. And it's not because I'm a massive devout Christian. It's just I did think just that. I wonder, would the same disrespect be afforded to leaders of other religions? And it kind of has really put a sour taste in my mouth. I would strongly suggest anyone in a position of influence or otherwise, don't do it, because it really is off-putting. And if you're going to do it to all, you know. Sorry, Carmel, you're back with me now. There was an echo on that line and it was going to be very difficult for the both of us.
No problem, Greg. I'm ringing the landline here now, so it should be better.
Happy days. Now, we know Manor Cunningham Community Resource Centre is completely voluntary, which leaves you very vulnerable to input costs like electricity and heating oil, etc. What's the situation there like?
Situation there, as Craig, at the moment is we would have spent approximately, you know, $4,500 roughly on heating oil every year, because you can imagine that the centre is very big. We have a lot of classes and activities going on in there, and heating needs to be on, and especially the way the weather has been, you know, and especially this year. That will now, at the current prices, probably double to and around 9,000. We, as I said, we are a voluntary organisation with no government funding of any kind, and we cannot sustain that for any length of time. So it's been a voluntary organisation.
To the point whereby, if it continues, I think you've said that you could be forced to close. Now, we hope that doesn't happen, but there's a reality. You can't just keep spending money, especially money you don't have as a voluntary organisation.
Exactly, Greg. I mean, we cannot. I mean, we're, as I say, we're a voluntary run organisation. We depend on people coming into the centre for various classes, meetings, etc., like that there. And we have to have heating on for them. They can't come into a cold building. So it is. So, and you can imagine, it's just a community hall. You know, it's not that very well insulated or anything like that there. So you have to have heating on. And I mean, the current price is for it to actually have doubled. I mean, I got, just to give an example, we got oil just before Christmas, and it was €870 for 1,000 litres. Mm. And 3 weeks ago now, I got, we got 500 litres, which was €860. So you're basically doubling the price that you're paying for home heating oil. It doesn't make any sense. And especially, I mean, I was actually sitting down last night, Greg, doing some some calculations. And I mean, Ireland consumes approximately 158,000 barrels of, you know, home heating oil, you know, oil, petrol, diesel per day. So that is 24 million, over 24 million, 25 litres, million litres per day. Mm-hmm. And the government is actually taking probably at 77% of that there, because they actually take 44 cents goes to excise duty, 16 cents goes to carbon tax, and 33% goes to VAT. So you can work out, I haven't done the maths, Greg, but if we are using nearly 25 million litres of, you know, between petrol, diesel, home heating oil per day, it doesn't take a genius to say how much the government are taking in. Something I actually never thought of before, and I'm sure a lot of people out there haven't thought about before. But yet the people of this country are being brought to their knees. Now, and I know we are just a community centre, and it doesn't probably come up very much on the scale of things. You take the ordinary working family or elderly people, they just can't sustain what has happened, Greg.
And, you know, ironically, I would say, you know, quite a few of those that come to the community centre enjoy the heat, and they might be at home not able to put their own heat on.
Exactly, Greg. I mean, we would have quite a few elderly people that would actually use our centre for, there's actually what we call a Thursday club. We have a curling club. Mm-hmm. And those people, probably 90-95% of them are, you know, well over 70. In fact, some of them are into age 90 and over. Mm. So we have to have, you can't have them sitting in a cold building.
No, and I would say yours, your situation, thankfully you're speaking out to give us all a better understanding of it, but I can only imagine it's the same for many other voluntary organisations across the...
I would imagine so, and nobody has been speaking out. I mean, you take it as actually for schools, for preschools, for, you know, for any kind of places out there, it must be, how are they going to absorb, you know, the extra cost that it is at the present time? I mean, the government, if even now, for the government at any stage to be taking over 70% on taxes, it's crazy. Mm. You take it that about oil, 74 cents of it goes to the oil company that has, the oil company, the transport and the fuel retailers, all included. So that's been getting the oil out of the ground, refining it, taking it, transporting it, and then the actual forecourt or the petrol stations. And the government is taking the rest. I mean, it doesn't make any... This has definitely ripped up Ireland, and I've never been as proud of the people of this country at the moment for actually finally standing up. Because, you know what? People are being brought to their knees, Greg. And I know I'm speaking for a local resource centre, which is a very important part of our community, as is any community centre. We are actually doing unpaid work for the government, because we're not a family resource centre. And there are many more out there. We applied for it a long number of years ago, but we're turned down to become a family resource centre, which they actually have at least some core funding. We have no core funding. It would be so, so sad to see our doors have to close over the cost of just heating the building. I mean, we can sustain, we have been sustaining, we were opened in 2000, and we've been running that centre all on a voluntary basis. Now, we would have had some funding in the early years through the peace programmes, things like that there, but since 2012, we've had no core funding of any kind. Mm. That the centre is run completely on a voluntary basis, with between 200 and 300 people coming through the doors every single week. So it's a very, very important part of the community.
Well, I'll tell you how important it is to during the lockdown, the stupid decision was made to close schools, and we're still getting the effects of that now. And if facilities like yours close down, it would have a roll-on impact on people, and then people for the rest of their lives, or indeed the length of their lives. You know, these things need to be factored in as well to the contribution of the likes of the Manor Conyngham Community Resource Centre, the role they play in people's physical and mental well-being.
Of course, and I mean, we are a rural area, a small rural area, and I mean, there are people now that can't afford to go to the likes of Letterkenny, two different classes and things like that there. So we find that people are using the centre more and more. Mm-hmm. And in fact, actually, because of probably the growing population and the likes of Letterkenny, we have people coming from Letterkenny out to things that we run in the centre. We have people coming from Newton Cunningham. We have people coming from Revaux. We have, you know, and I know Revaux, they have their own resource centres, but just maybe we might be running maybe something slightly different. So it is so important for any community. Okay. As you say, for their mental health, for just their well-being. And a lot of it is actually a social, you know, just because there is isolation out there. But that's very important,
though. In the absence of that, it has serious knock-on effects on people. And what happens is, when people are forced to stay at home or can't go out to events that you've run, for an example, they don't come back out again. Often. Do you know what I mean?
They don't come back out again. Yeah. And I mean, in COVID, actually, during COVID, that impacted very much so, and especially on our elderly community, because they were actually so afraid to come out. And they are starting to come back slowly. So that if we had to, end up closing, hopefully not come to that, closing the doors, it would be just so, so sad.
All right. Listen, thank you for your time, Carmel Doherty there. And, you know, I think there is a lot of people actually scared about the price of electricity and the price of oil or the price of solid fuel to heat your home. And I'm not saying it's... and I think it's often older, more vulnerable people. So that even if they do have some resources, if they're lucky enough, they'd be fearful of what's to come. And I suppose we have to be conscious of that when we talk about these things as well. But if you are one of those people, maybe you can give us an insight into the reality of whether you can put your heating on or how conscious you have to be about your use of electricity. You know, maybe you're sitting in a coat to the evening time. I don't know. Just to try and give us a better sense of what's going on, so maybe we can relate that to those that make the decisions to see if they want to do anything about that. You can give us a call here in confidence on 07491 25000, or WhatsApp or text 086 60 25000. Lots of you reflecting on the very sad passing of Moya Brennan. A caller says, Moya Brennan was indeed a keen follower of the Donegal football team. I recall her appearing on the cover of Hot Press magazine in her Donegal jersey for a lengthy interview in September of 1992. We're so sad to hear of the sad death of Moya Brennan. We last saw Moya perform so beautifully along with Daniel O'Donnell and Mairéadh Mooney at Chac Pad the Óg in Crawley, a fundraising concert to rebuild the church destroyed by fire in Darabega Guidor on the 28th of April 2025. It was a fantastic night, packed venue, and Moya's brother Bart invited us and others who travelled for the concert to park our campers in Leo's car park. There were free buses to bring people home from the concert. A very memorable night. Daniel, Moya and Mairéadh came down and stood with the packed audience and had photographs taken when they did their individual performances. God rest her. Sad to hear of the death of Moya Brennan. She met me on a few occasions, the last time being in Lifford, where she was awarded the Freedom of Donegal, and where I photobombed the family photo on the courthouse steps. Her voice tangibly created the ethereal atmosphere of West Donegal like no other. That comes in from Jim. And Micheál Martin on Taoiseach. Micheál Martin has paid tribute, saying, deeply saddened at the passing of Moya Brennan, an iconic Irish voice. Along with her clannad bandmates, Moya brought Irish folk music to the international stage. Deepest sympathies to Moya's family and friends at this difficult time. Tánaiste and Fine Gael leader Simon Harris said, I'm deeply saddened to hear of the passing of Moya Brennan. Moya was a musical icon with a unique voice of extraordinary beauty. She went from Guidor to global renown with clannad, bringing Irish music to the international audience. Her loss will be deeply felt throughout the music and arts communities and far beyond. Just some of the tributes being paid to the late and great Moya Brennan, who very sadly passed away last evening. Right, we're joined on the programme now by Jonathan Coyle, who's the CEO of Inishowen Credit Union. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for your time. How are you keeping?
Good morning, Greg. I'm very well, thanks. And thanks for having me on this morning.
No, it's important too, because there is a launch, isn't there? The launch of a €100,000 community fund. What's this all about?
Yeah, so Greg, today I'm really excited to share that Inishowen Credit Union have launched our €100,000 community fund. And why I'm here today is I want every school, sports group, community group and charity across the peninsula to know that this money's there for them. Applications are open right now, and we'd love to hear from them.
So who is this fund open to, or what organisations or groups or individuals for that matter?
Yeah, so we've got two streams, one for primary and secondary schools. So there'll be grants up to €1,000 for them, and also one for community organisations. And the grants for those community organisations will range from €2,000 to €10,000.
Give us an idea of some of last year's beneficiaries.
So last year's community fund was for €50,000. And for me, it's something that that I'm most professionally proud to have been involved with. We had tremendous success last year. We are now working towards putting in our 25th new defibrillator across the Inishowen Peninsula. These defibrillators went down the length and breadth of Inishowen. And literally, your proximity to a defibrillator could be the difference between life and death. We fully funded and installed these defibrillators. We work closely with local first responders and community groups to put these
in. And just to give the listeners an idea how wide-ranging this is, St. Angus National School, Urris Chapel, Carndonagh Community School, Menshed Moville, Illis Football Club, Big White Bay, Shrove. Quite a remarkable achievement to be able to fund and support the installation of these defibs in those locations.
Yeah, and look, it sits really perfectly with our ethos about being for community and not for profit, that we're taking surpluses that we generate throughout the year and giving it back to community and giving it back to the people of Inishowen who, you know, your last two contributions talked a lot about the pressures on our communities and funding. And for us to be able to give back to the communities in this way is just something we're very proud of.
Yeah, and community organisations that benefited last year, again, just to give people a sense, community gardens or allotments, school sensory rooms, sensory gardens, sports equipment. These are the sort of the spaces from which people can apply and have had success in the past. Tidy Towns Initiative, tree planting, food banks, workshops, local theatre, cultural festivals, murals, public seating, lighting, bike racks. It's kind of self-explanatory, but I want to give people a real sense to sort of, you know, to whet the appetite and get an application in. How do people apply?
So people apply in inishowencu.ie. Where there's application forms online for both streams. People can also come into our free offices in Carn, Moville and Buncrana, and our members, service officer, will be only too delighted to talk them through their application and help support them through that.
Could I stick in a cheeky application from Lahey, or is it specifically to Inishowen?
It's for the Inishowen community, the Common Bond area. But, you know, the benefits are, you know, are obviously enjoyed by people who come into community in Inishowen. And again, as your last contributors said, a lot of these community groups will service areas in a much broader reach than just sure. the area that they're in. Yeah.
Yeah. And is this not unique, but are many credit unions doing this? It's really quite an interesting initiative. You know, maybe some others do draws or whatever. I don't know. I'm not being critical either. I'm just curious because this is the first time this has really come across my attention.
Yeah, no, it is a relatively new initiative. And last year we set the standard on it with our community fund of 50,000. It went so well that our board and our members voted our AGM to double that fund to 100,000 because they could see the real life impact it was having on our members. And again, as I say, look, you know, credit unions, all credit unions are financial cooperatives. They don't exist for profit. So this is one of the ways in which we give back to our community on services generated from our core activities.
All right, well done. Okay. Just remind us once again if people want more information or to apply.
Yeah, so inishowencu.ie, and also they can call into any one of our offices, Carn, Moville or Buncrana, and we'd be delighted to see them and talk to them.
Well done. Thank you very much indeed. Jonathan Cole, CEO of Inishowen Credit Union. More of you reflecting on the very sad passing of Moira Brennan. Greg, regarding Moira, what a legend for Donegal. Yes, Harry's Game. Yes, In a Life with Bono, which is iconic. But our diversity was amazing. Check out the dance track with Chicane, Saltwater, Oisin. Oisin, I did not know that Moya was involved in Saltwater. I'm actually going to re-listen to that. Back to the issue of fuels. I paid €907 for 1,000 litres of oil on the 20th of January. This will cost me €1,610. This is just outside of my available income. Wow. I mean, how could anyone afford? I mean, I think at €500 for 500 litres, that's kind of been the thing in my head. You can sort of work with that often. Many people can. But, I mean, when you're going up to double of that, just to heat the home? Crazy. Greg, just to say, Carmel's an absolute hero. If we had her in government or the council, so much would get done. We were lucky to have her in Glenties for years, and she was just a powerhouse of hard work and positivity. I just wanted to give her some recognition and the recognition she deserves. Thank you. That's what we're here for. The heating costs in Donegal are one thing, but no one seems to be talking about the added cost for people who travel from Donegal. We in Donegal have to go to Dublin and Galway for cancer treatment. They have a mortgage and kids. This is an added cost. They have to go up for treatment and checkups. Everything has doubled, so a trip that costs €70 could now cost €140 and so on. Cancer patients have enough going on. They don't need the stress of extra costs too. So true. Greg, when are you going to mention the 4-hour drive slow protest last evening? I don't have any information in relation to it. If you could give me the info, I'm a dad, okay, and a partner and stuff, and had things to do. So I can't be across absolutely everything. And rather than sort of try and imply that I'd be ignoring it or try and trip me up or would land a punch or something, give me the information and then I can relate it. You know, I'm not interested in the bitterness and the snipiness, and it's just not who I am or what I want. If you want to talk about something, or if there's something that I haven't mentioned that you think we should talk about, why don't you just send in the information rather than sort of almost semi-nasty online-y kind of stuff. What we don't want creeping into. Maybe I've misinterpreted your message, but if there's something I haven't talked about, let me know about it. I don't know, to be honest with you, because I was busy at home last night. I try and keep up to date with as much as I can, but it's impossible to keep up with absolutely everything. As if the suggestion would be that I would be not mentioning it or covering it up or something, I don't know.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, monitoring homes and businesses in the Northwest for intruder, fire, panic and medical signals. Call Sheridan Security on 91-26025.
Okay, it is 22 minutes past 10 on this Tuesday, the 14th of April, and it's time for this week's Community Garda information. And very pleased to welcome back into studio with us Garda Grainne Doherty from the Letterkenny Garda Station. Grainne, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
Congratulations on the tea day, or what do you call that down at Cora?
Our coffee morning yesterday, Carahouse. Yeah, it was part of Social Inclusion Week. We'll be talking about that a wee bit later
on. Oh, sorry,
yeah.
That's a spoiler, is it? Right, we'll come back to that in a bit then. It was a hugely successful event. We were able to get down after the show, and it was great to see Katie, who was in last week, giving it a plug as well. And the food was absolutely delicious. The sandwiches.
I can't take credit for that, but
I was like a chipmunk leaving with my two cheeks full of food for later. Anyway, we'll get down to more serious matters to begin with, and appeals. We'll start with information being sought in relation to criminal damage in Inishowen, Grainne.
Yes, Gardaí are investigating this incident of criminal damage. It occurred in the area of Churchland Quarters, Carndonagh, between 9 p.m. on Monday the 6th of April and 9 a.m. the following morning, Tuesday the 7th of April. So the rear windscreen of a car that was parked in a car park in that area was smashed overnight. Entry wasn't gained and nothing was stolen from within. So we're appealing to anybody who might have observed this incident or who might have any relevant information to contact Gardaí in Buncrana on 932-0540.
Now we will go to Castlefin and further investigations into criminal damage.
Another criminal damage incident at Castlefin. Yeah, so Monday the 13th of April at approximately 11:20 p.m, the front living room window of a house in the area of Alt Upper Castlefin was smashed. So as part of our investigation into this matter, we're looking to speak to anybody who might have travelled in that area with a dash cam between 11 p.m. and midnight. And if anybody observed, again, any type of suspicious activity in that area last night, we're asking them to please contact Gardaí in Ballyshannon on 071-985-8530. And as always, the Garda Confidential line, they can be reached on 1800-666-111.
Yes, it's regrettable to see any instances of criminal damage, but anytime you mention the ones where windows are smashed, it always puts in my mind of, you know, People could be on a couch or a baby could be in a cot under the window. It really is the people responsible need to know that this could turn into something far, far more serious as it already is. Right, Letterkenny next, and interference with a car.
Yes, we're appealing for the assistance of the public in connection with this incident. It happened at Westside Apartments in Letterkenny between midday on Thursday the 9th of April and midday on Friday the 10th of April. So a resident parked his car in the parking area at those apartments. He returned the following day and he discovered that the front passenger side door handle had been interfered with. Entry wasn't gained to the car. So we're just appealing to anybody who might have observed any type of suspicious activity around parked vehicles in that area between those times to get in touch with Gardaí in Letterkenny on 9167100. And we regularly appeal to people, you know, if you ever see anybody in car parks, public car parks, you know, and just peering in windows of cars, trying door handles of cars, please do alert Gardaí immediately.
And, you know, maybe people go, well, you know, it's none of my business, but it could be your car next. And, you know, just let Gardaí know what's going on. You don't have to get terribly involved just to say, look, there is some suspicious activity.
Exactly. And you don't even have to see anybody entering a car. But if you think that they're trying out cars, trying out door handles, you know, and even the CCTV from that area could be checked after the event,
exactly,
you know.
Yeah, for sure, in a more timely way. Let's go north to Buncrana now. And a theft incident.
Yes, Buncrana Gardaí are investigating this incident. A theft incident had occurred in the area of Shandrum, Drumfries, between midday on Saturday the 4th of April and 9:30 a.m. on Wednesday the 8th of April. So a red New Holland disc mower was stolen from a yard in that area between those times. If anybody can assist with relevant information or if they observed any type of suspicious activity in that area between those dates, we're asking them to please contact Gardaí in Buncrana on 932-0540. And as always, if anybody's offered similar type of machinery for sale on a second hand basis, alert us so we can check the matter out. Might be totally innocent, but just alert us anyway so we can check it out.
For sure. Now, something we don't go across a great deal in terms of the appeals. I'm not saying it doesn't happen very often. This is a dog-related incident in Dunfanaghy.
Yes. So on Friday the 10th of April, at approximately midday, we received a report that a lady was attacked by a dog in the area of Lurgabrack, Hornhead, Dunfanaghy. So this dog was described as being medium-sized and light, a light colour. No further details are available as of yet. We're appealing to anybody who might be aware of a dog that is on the loose in that area that matches that description, just to alert Gardaí or the dog warden immediately. If anybody travelled in that area with a dash cam on that date around midday, we're asking them to please make that footage available to us. So the lady in question, she did require medical attention for non-life-threatening injuries. But we're anxious to locate this dog just to, you know, so we can avoid any further type incidents.
Sure. And it's interesting, you know, because we have had appeals over the last couple of weeks, as we do every year with lambing season. And not all of these incidents are elevated to the guards for that matter. But it's interesting speaking to farmers how many have had instances, especially it seems over Easter, where maybe people were coming into the area and don't necessarily have an understanding of rural life, or maybe think that it's a big, massive caravan park or something. I don't know. But again, it's worth reminding people, isn't it? Of course, a very serious incident there that you referenced in Dunfanaghy and had the potential to be serious, but also to make sure you have control of your dogs with lambing season being ongoing.
Of course, yes. So in light of this incident, and also because, and we do regularly remind dog owners, you know, it's lambing season, and we want to remind dog owners their pet must be kept under control at all times. With dog ownership comes responsibility. You have to secure your dog, have it microchipped, register it with your vet, and always keep your family pet under effectual control. So by being a responsible dog owner, you can help prevent incidents like this one, attacks on people, on sheep or on their lambs. People need to be aware also, just in relation to lambing season, that, you know, farmers are within their rights to shoot any dog that they find on their farm that's, you know, attacking their sheep. And the owner of the dog also might be liable to prosecution, you know. So just, it can escalate into something more serious. Just
very
keep your family
serious,
pet under
for
control.
Sure. Indeed. Okay. Now, witnesses being sought in relation to a road traffic collision next.
Yes, Gardaí are seeking witnesses to a road traffic collision that occurred in the area of Grahamsland, Castlefin, between Saturday the 11th of April at 11 p.m. and Sunday the 12th of April at 7:30 a.m. So a black Audi crashed through the garden wall of a house in that area, and it came to halt in the garden between those times. Significant damage was caused to the wall and to the car also. So the registration plates on this car were believed to be false. Investigations are ongoing, and we're appealing to anybody who might have witnessed this collision or who might have any type of relevant information to contact Gardaí in Ballyshannon on 071 985 8530.
Brilliant stuff. Okay. And let's go on now to, we're in the middle of Social Inclusion Week. And of course, the Gardaí have been involved in that.
Yeah, so this year's One Donegal Social Inclusion Week takes place between the 9th of April to the 17th. So again, we're delighted to take part again in Social Inclusion Week this year. And as you mentioned earlier, we had our coffee morning in Cara House yesterday.
I'll just ask you in relation to that, if you don't mind, and without fear of being arrested, I'm sure. What would you do? What was your role there? Because from what I could see, I had to dispense my own water and also the sandwiches seemed to have been bought in.
Yes.
So... I don't mean it badly, but well, you were just standing there, look pretty. Is that...
You were certainly the most demanding customer I had at my coffee morning yesterday. I'm only joking.
No, look,
we're there in a community policing capacity.
Lovely to see. As I say, the setting down there is lovely. The welcome was lovely. And of course, the Garda hosted coffee morning was lovely as well.
Yeah, and we'd just like to thank yourself and Shannon and Caroline. Thank you very much for coming along. To everybody that came along, I had a great chat yesterday with there was various groups in Cara House. And you know what? So speaking of social inclusion, you don't get much, it doesn't come much more socially inclusive than Cara House, you know, and it's such an invaluable asset to the area.
And I was gutted I didn't get to hang around and listen to the entertainment that they had on for the afternoon, because in advance of it, it sounded fantastic, and we've had some of the performers up here. Mm. There's other stuff coming up still, though. It's not too late, is there?
Well,
is
this morning, actually, now. So everybody's very welcome to come along to the Board Games and Brew event. This is on in the Finn Valley Family Resource Centre this morning between 10:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. So call and enjoy a cuppa while playing a board game and having a good chat. So this event was organised by local community Gardaí and the Finn Valley Community Health Forum, and this again is part of Social Inclusion Week. So tomorrow we'll be at Lifford Garda Station, and Garda Síochána will host the local, you know, the wellness cafes. Mm-hmm. They're right across Donegal. So
they've really grown in like, I think it was Letterkenny, the original one was in, and the concept obviously really, really works because
really
they're all over
off.
The place now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Lifford Wellness Cafe will be held in Lifford Garda Station tomorrow, Wednesday the 15th, between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. again as part of Social Inclusion Week. And it's a great opportunity to meet others and support your well-being in a friendly, relaxed environment. So please, we do encourage the public, call in tomorrow. We'll have information there about wellness cafes in your own area, whether right across Donegal. We'll have that info there. Do call in tomorrow for a cuppa and a chat with us.
Yeah.
If anybody wants to see the full programme of events for Social Inclusion Week, it's on the Donegal County Council website, and I've posted the link to the Garda Facebook page also. There's a wealth of events on over the course of the week.
Brilliant.
Something to suit everybody.
Great opportunity to get out there and meet people and have a nice cup of tea or coffee or a ball game as well too. All right, brilliant stuff. Garda Grainne, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Greg.
That was Garda Grainne, the hearty for this week's Community Garda Information. It's put back with you, of course, as you know, after the 10 o'clock news next Tuesday. If you missed anything or want to recap anything that was included in that item, it's going to be available on this programme's podcast, but also available for you to watch on our socials and on the Garda Síochána Facebook page. We have a very special guest, certainly one I won't be taking on anyway. That's Liam Grant, who won gold at the ISKA. Is it pronounced ISKA or do you say ISKA?
ISKA.
Right, the ISKA Irish Open 2026 in the K1 kickboxing category. When was that fight?
That fight was on Saturday now.
Not a mark on your face.
I know.
He didn't get you, no?
No.
Come here, before we talk about how successful you've been, when did you start with your interest in kickboxing?
I think it might have been around, maybe I was about 6 years old, just watching back then. Sean McGregor was big. He was well known. He was doing well. I think just rifled really from that.
And you says, well, I like his style, I like his maybe even his arrogance or his self-belief.
The
I can
way
do
he was and the way he brought Ireland up, it just made me want to fight.
So, I mean, obviously, you know, in terms of combat sport, there's MMA there, maybe there's boxing. Why did you get down the kickboxing route as opposed to others?
I just found boxing was fun, but at the same time, you're only using really your arms. I just didn't find you get enjoyment out of it. Well, with kickboxing, you can use your legs and your knees, which is just more fun. You have so many more weapons to use.
Yeah, and is there a big kickboxing community in Donegal? Like, was it hard to sort of get the right training and I suppose the right opponents to train with?
Yeah, well, Donegal, now I'd say it's a lot quieter compared to boxing. It's really much quieter compared up the north. It's getting big, and especially down the country in the south, like Dublin, that it's a lot bigger than up here. Like,
and in terms of, so say for instance with boxing, which is, I'm sorry to keep referencing it, it's just something I'm a little bit more familiar with. So you have the amateurs, right? And there's a lot of lads and girls now that would take part in the amateurs, maybe fight in the Europeans or the Nationals or even maybe the Olympics, and then maybe turn over, right, and go pro. So are you Are you an amateur kickboxer at
I'm
the moment?
I'm amateur now.
So you're taking part in amateur tournaments, is that it?
All amateur tournaments and all my fights are amateur.
And how does the amateur kickboxing sport compare to, in terms of, I suppose, you know, maybe gloves or contact or time, or what's the difference?
Amateur, well, your gloves, you're still 10 ounces. If you're fighting pro, I'm 100% sure it's still 10 ounces. The difference between amateur and pro compared to gear is maybe when you're amateur, it all depends. Under 18, you normally have to keep the head guard on. Compared to us, when you're pro, your head guard's off. And in pro, you don't wear shin guards at all.
Mm.
Which just means it's more, just more aggressive.
So you're 17, so you're 17. You're in the under 18s category, effectively, right? So you, and what I thought was great, and this is why I love the Donegal Sports Star Awards, that they have categories that recognise people doing fantastic in different sports. You won the martial arts category, which was great. Great to get recognition in your own county, wasn't it? Brilliant, especially at a younger age. But obviously from Buncrana, you are up in the Stripe Martial Arts Academy in Derry. What's that like? What's the gym like in terms of atmosphere?
It's class. Like, it's more or less like a second family to me, because like, you go up there and it's all, no matter what, it doesn't matter what level you are, you could be the best in the club or you could be just up and coming. You're all treated the same training, and it's just all really, every bit of effort that goes into the club, it's always pushed back out compared to other people, clubs, family members, their mother and father are also helping you. If you're fighting, like say I'm fighting, and I have nobody to warm me up, or say one of the coaches are out coaching another fighter, I'll always have someone else there compared to if it's someone's mammy or uncle, someone like that.
Yeah, and at the level you're at, and I don't mean level in terms of how good you are, I mean just in terms of amateur pro, like, how do you win a fight? Is it literally, you know, knocking the other guy out, or is it about scoring, or where is the focus in the amateur game?
Well, for me, like, winning a fight, it's just kind of all experience. Like, I can go in that fight on Saturday, I was fighting a boy called Sean Smith,
yeah,
and just got in the ring and everyone just came flowing to me. Like, I wasn't there to knock him out, I wasn't there to really hurt him, it's just whatever came to me. Like, there's opportunities that open during the fight. Say I had a body shot, then I know he's a bit weak there, and I know I could finish the fight.
Yeah. You see a reaction, don't you? Yeah.
Yeah. Or there's just times where you want to work yourself out. If you're fighting more than once in a day, you want to ease yourself in and be ready for your next fight.
Right, so your style then, I presume you go through a feeling out process then?
Yeah, I'd be very technical.
Yeah.
And once I know, say I pick up on something, or I see maybe he's hurt somewhere, I'll wait until I know the time's right instead of me bursting myself before I can properly go in and do it.
Well, I think some of the best fighters in whatever combat sport are those that can adapt during the fight.
100%, yeah.
Because sometimes you see, and in fact with boxing at the weekend, saw it a bit with Conor Benn, if you're one-dimensional, a good fighter figures you out very, very quickly.
100%,
you have to be able to adapt, don't you?
Yeah, 100%. Or I've always said you got to be unpredictable. There's no point repeating the same thing or even having a game plan in your head really going in the ring, because it's true, once you get hit, everything goes out the window. Like, it just, you have to just act on instinct, and that's how it works.
It's so true, isn't it? The thing too, in terms of sport, music, whatever it might be, we punch above our weights, if you pardon the pun, here in the Northwest, because you have access to a world champion as a coach. Here locally, which is fantastic, isn't it?
Oh, amazing. Pint is a four-time world heavyweight champion. Like, so even at that, having him in your corner, it's amazing, because even, like, there's no way in it. Like, if I'm in the corner and I'm doing a fight, normally you can tell if you're winning the round or losing by yourself, but if the round's close, I always rely on him to tell me, right, Liam, you're losing, get your head in the game, or there's always stuff I'll be missing which I don't see, and he'll always come in and help me and tell me, right, that's open for you and all that. So it's great to have all that experience behind you.
In terms of your prep, I think you enjoy the cardio side of things anyway, don't you? Like cycling or running or whatever, right? So to be the best at your game, is it about, like, how important is how powerfully you strike, or is it about timing necessarily? To go back to Conor McGregor, you know what I mean? Yeah. A lot of his is about timing necessarily, not about what's your.
Well, I'd say more amateur level. Your running's everything, really. Like, if you can go 12 rounds without breaking really a sweat or even barely tired, you'll win most fights in amateur, because it's all about that gas tank. But compared to two at the same time, when I'm fighting, I wouldn't be training mad power because it's always the shot that lands flush, it's always the one that's going to hurt them. It doesn't matter. You can tense up as hard as you can and swing, but if a person sees it, they're going to see it, compared to if you're just loose and you throw
it. They don't see it coming. It 100%. doubles the power, doesn't it? Right, so last year is an underage or an under 18. So what is the target then? Another national title or what?
Well, I just felt there in the Irish Open there, so that's another Irish belt. I have another one of these green ones. I'm actually going to collect it tonight.
Brilliant.
So after this now, Irish Open is done. That's praised, all that done. Yeah. I have a Four Nations belt now in May, the 23rd, over in the Everglades. It's our home show, Strike's home show. So I'm getting a boy from England over to fight me for that.
It's not a mug.
Huh?
It's not a mug. It's going to be a...
Well, big...
Yeah, it's a big one, isn't it?
Serious. Like, it'd be good to get the Four Nations under my belt before I turn 18, because then it leaves the door open for me whenever I turn 18. There's loads of fight.
And you're going to the Worlds as a underage?
Worlds in Madrid is in November. I turn 18 on the 26th of November, but Worlds going to be before that, so I'll still be underage for that.
So then you're going to... Do you start then... I mean, obviously, then you're in against adults, right? Mm-hmm. And listen, you're a big, strong guy, don't get me wrong. But it's going to be very different for you, isn't it, when you go in against people, same weight, but maybe have, you know, say if you're 25, 26, you build strength, don't you, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And whereas in the categories you are now, you can be the best, but... It's going to be interesting for you. Are you excited for that challenge?
I'm actually more excited, I reckon, to fight overage. Like, I can't wait to get the headgear off, and I don't like fighting with it. Like, I'll spare the headgear off.
I imagine it's quite restrictive. Especially if you're focusing on timing 100%. And stuff. Yeah, it's a distraction.
But I always said, even to the family and that, I'd rather fight someone older than me than fight someone young. Like, I get their strength with you when you come older, but in a ring, strength doesn't really mean much. All our muscles mean nothing, because at the end of the day, it's just... how you are. If someone could be strong as a bull, but if you fight around them, sure, they're not going to win.
So what's your aspirations? What can you achieve in the kickboxing world?
Well, hopefully whenever I turn 18, I definitely want to go pro and still fight for titles all across the country. Like, I know you can go everywhere with it. You can, like, even now at my age, I get to take my family with me over to foreign countries to fight. Like,
it's fantastic. And as well, too, Alexander Usyk is fighting Rico Verhoeven, mm-hmm. who is probably one of the most famous kickboxers in the world. What is important, I think, for that fight, for someone like you, is that it brings more eyes actually on kickboxing.
Oh, 100%.
Right, whatever way it comes out, it's in under the pyramids, you know, I mean, but it brings, because we've seen a lot of MMA guys, you know, but what a platform for kickboxing, right? He's not kickboxing, but it brings kickboxing into the general conversation, which I think is good, isn't it?
100%, because boxing's always been there, like, from years ago, no matter what. And, like, it's not going to go anywhere anytime soon. But recently it has been getting boring. Like, there's not as much as big mega fights happening anymore and all that, correct? So it'd be good to see if kickboxing can just get bigger and bigger with it, and there'd be bigger fights within there.
Yeah. Who's going to win that fight?
Who do I...
See, I always think it's I don't really like these kind of contests, because you bring in someone who's an expert in one field into the backyard of someone who's the best in their field, and it's kind of like almost a hide into nothing. You never know, right? But
I reckon Usyk will probably win it, just for some reason. He's trained boxing flat out his whole life, and Rico, I'm not going to lie, there's a big difference between kickboxing and boxing. Like, your timing's completely different in kickboxing. You can be closer to someone, but you have to worry about their legs or their knees coming up compared to just hands. You can see what your hands are doing. You can't look at hands and legs at the same time. Like,
I saw one guy fighting a former kickboxer in a boxing ring, and it was terrible, really. But obviously, you're tuned in to see a leg strike coming.
Oh, 100%,
right? So you would have reacted soon. Well, he fainted a leg strike in a boxing match, and your boy knocked him clean out. Like, it was a dirty old trick. But just one other thing, though, in terms of how committed you are to kickboxing. Jason Quigley, say he was at the Everglades, right? And he says, you know what, I can promote you in the boxing game here, and, you know, this, that, and then. Would you ever be tempted to?
I wouldn't say I would be now. For some reason, I've been kickboxing my whole life. Love it. Like, there's days you wake up every day and you're thinking, I wouldn't be bothered going there, I wouldn't be bothered doing this. But I reckon I would just date the kickboxing. Like, I know Jason well. Jason invited me to his show there in Letterkenny the last day. Amazing show. He's doing well for the boxing down
that's
last
what
year
I'm thinking
well.
Yeah, it's great to see proper action up here, isn't
and
it?
He's getting loads of young boys I know sponsoring, being behind them, which is amazing to see. But I think I'd just stay with the kickboxing.
Right, okay, no harm. Well, that's, you never know what might come into the future. It's really exciting. And listen, talk about a collection of silverware and goldware, but you know it's called silverware, collectively speaking. The very best of luck. Can't wait to see how you get on to when you turn over. But, I mean, it's been an amazing amateur career so far, and you put the icing on the cake later this year, hopefully.
Hopefully, yes, that's right. May now is the main thing. I'm looking forward to that. Like, I can't wait. And it's going to be...
You're chomping at the bit for that, aren't you? 100%. You'd like it tomorrow.
Home show's amazing as well, because you've all the dairy support behind you, so I'm looking
forward
to that.
Busloads from Derry, Buncrana as well, don't you?
100%. We'll get buses up, like, so... Looking forward to it, definitely.
All right, listen, well, congratulations, well done. Liam, it's great to see someone local doing so well and growing the image of kickboxing as well, because you talked about people that you inspired. You know, you're getting to the point now where you're beginning to inspire a next generation, even though you're only 17 yourself. Mm. But listen, continued success, congratulations, and thanks so much for calling in, and the best of luck with the career.
Thank you very much.
Now, in a rather interesting, if I could put it like that, intervention. Minister for Communication Patrick O'Donovan has said that he'll be asking Commissioner Mann to review the media coverage, including coverage from RTE News of the fuel protests in recent days. He was speaking on local radio stations this morning, yesterday morning, TIP, WRFM, Limerick Live, etc., where he outlined how he had received calls into his constituency office from people saying that while they were in favour of a protest, they were against blockading. Right, interested to get the views now of Seamus Dooley, who's NUJ Assistant General Secretary. And I don't want to overframe this, and I certainly don't want to be biased, but it feels a little bit of a sinister intervention, this, Seamus, when you have the government really having this kind of commentary on what I thought was relatively fair media coverage.
Yeah, I think, leave aside whether it's fair or not, the first issue is it's none of his business. Commissioner Mann is the independent regulator. They have a legislation, there is legislation which says that they investigate independently the media coverage, and that's what they do. And you can't imagine a situation where the Minister for Justice would order the Garda Ombudsman's office to carry out an independent investigation. That's just not it. So the Minister's entitled to have a hissy fit. He's entitled to disagree with coverage. But for the Minister, who is responsible for the media, to publicly go on a series of interviews clearly planned, that is concerning, actually, and it's something that we in the NUJ, and I think anyone working in the media, would have a concern about. It brings us right back to 1966 when Sean Lamas said that, you know, RTE, as it was the main media organisation at the time, was an instrument of state policy. It's not. But the Minister made it clear he wasn't just talking about RTE, he was talking about media in general, and he had a particular gripe about his own radio station in Limerick. And it's hard not to believe that constituency considerations came into view in that interview. I listened to the very full interview. I also followed over the weekend the media coverage, and, you know, obviously I represent journalists. I know the working conditions. I used to be a journalist. It is extremely difficult to achieve the sort of balance that one would like in any given story. But it's not the function of the media to change the news because a minister of the day, particularly the line minister, is going to take offence.
Yeah, we have a bit of experience of that here because Minister Charlie McConnellogue's refused to appear on this show for a number of years, stating that he believes the coverage is skewed. Now, he's the only politician who doesn't appear on the programme. So if you couple that with these kind of conversations from Patrick O'Donovan, it does show a changing potential landscape. One other thing too, in terms of Mr. O'Donovan, does it need to be scrutinised his opinion to the media? Because he was on this show previously, and I can play the clip back, it was a pretty innocent question, but he became quite riled at that. So do we not need to investigate that maybe his opinion of the media is coming from his own bias?
Well, I think the problem that exists in relation to, you know, everyone has a bias, everyone is entitled to their opinion, but when you are the minister who has responsibility for media policy and regulation, you're actually very powerful. You know, you ultimately decide how much money RTE is going to get. You have a funding role in relation to Commissioner Mann. You have a decision in relation ultimately to sign off on radio licences. But also, on this particular issue, he does have a dog in the fight. he is annoyed because, as he said to Joe Nash in Limerick, I was only on your radio programme once last week. He doesn't have some special entitlement above any other TD or spokesperson to appear on the radio station. But also, he's part of the story. He is part of the story. He is a government minister. He doesn't have a special right or consideration. No politician has in that right. Yeah. And it would be easy to overreact, perhaps. But in the current, in the language that he used was Trumpian in the extreme. And, you know, we know the Trump playbook. We also, as a union, have, you know, are very much unconcerned at the manner in which some of the protesters treated media, and the abuse in particular directed online towards journalists who raise questions about the protest leaders are of concern. But if you place yourself in a ministerial position and you decide to lecture the media from the high moral ground, you should not then deploy the language of those who you're criticising.
Yeah, but what can you do about that? There's nothing. I mean, if a minister refuses to speak to a radio station or uses an opportunity when they're on to criticise it, you know,
Well, ultimately, I think this is a matter for Commissioner Mann in the first instance. I mean, I would like them to issue a statement saying that, you know, that if the minister wants to make a complaint in his capacity as a citizen, fine, on a specific complaint. But there is nothing in legislation, it's very clear, there is nothing in legislation which allows for the kind of review that he is suggesting. He doesn't have the power to direct the commission in this way.
It's very difficult when you get the majority of a population who feel one way and then a relatively small group of people who they attribute the reason they feel that way to strike that absolute balance. I mean, yesterday, for an example, we spoke to government representatives on this issue, but it'd be very hard to balance the pain and the struggle of the regular folk that are also texting in and trying to express their views on how this is impacting them.
Well, I think there are a few issues. I reject completely the notion that three or four spokespersons for a protest are representing the views of the people of the nation. They have their right to their view. They come on, you interrogate that view. Politicians are going to be annoyed because they are protesting against the politicians. But everyone has to be open to scrutiny. And I think the minister talks about balance and that's the word he keeps using, and he wants an inquiry into balance. You do not achieve balance in one programme or even in a series of programmes.
It's certainly
not measured by terms of the number of people in a panel or in a studio on a given day, or equally the number of people who, because of the mood at a moment in time, ring a particular radio station. And it is concerning that the Minister for Media Responsibility has such a hostile attitude, but we're stuck with him.
Okay, well, listen, it's very. I find your comments very interesting, and I think it's a positive intervention as well, because we don't want to find ourselves going down the route of other nations. We have a free and fair media in this country, I think. Thank you.
I'd be worried if politicians love the media. The media should be worried if they were loved by politicians. But we should at least respect one another and respect our right to do our work without threats from either side.
I couldn't agree with you anymore. Seamus Dooley, NUJ Assistant General Secretary, thank you very much indeed. And that's where we leave it on the programme today. We're back tomorrow morning at 9 a.m.